Hello, everybody, and welcome into Bet on Chicago. Happy 4th of July weekend. I'm Danny Burke with the Vegas Stats and Information Network, broadcasting live, as always, at the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa in sunny Las Vegas, Nevada. In dry heat Las Vegas, Nevada, that is. Alongside me, good friend, Chuck Esposito, Sportsbook Director over at Sunset Station. Chuck, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, Danny. Happy 4th to all the listeners as well. And, you know, this is a month for fireworks, so we hope that basketball, baseball, and hockey are all giving some out later this month.
That is for sure, and that's what we are hoping and praying for, Chuck, because we desperately need it. And
we do, buddy.
And really quick, I'll just say on the show, we got Mike Palm coming up in a few minutes. We'll talk some hockey, go over NHL series prices. Then we'll talk some football. Myself and Chuck look at those odds for Trubisky versus Foles to be the starter again. Yeah, we talk about it a lot, but the odds keep moving. Trubisky keeps climbing up as the favorite. We'll let you know that are those odds.
And we're going to tell you why he's the favorite.
We're going to give you some cold, hard facts. Chuck is at least. And we're going to dive more into that, so be sure to stick around. And then we'll go to the Diamond, talk some baseball with our friend Jeff Erickson, RotoWire senior editor, host of RotoWire Fantasy Sports Today. Look at some MLB props, season win totals for both the Cubs and Sox, and more. But Chuck, you talked about fireworks, and that's what we hope to see from these sports leagues. And I got to ask you this. So the report are, okay, so the NBA seemed like they had it altogether compared to the MLB and NHL. Maybe not the NHL as much because they're the first ones to say, but then it's like, okay, what are the hub cities going to be? They're kind of taking it slow. Now we've heard of the two hub cities in Canada. The more these days go on, the more we're growing a little bit weary of the NBA. Players are opting out. Silver comes out and saying, yeah, there's of course a possibility it might not happen in entirety. Now we see a report that there could be a second bubble in Chicago for the rest of the teams. I mean, well, this is ludicrous. No, can we just focus
hit on the one
the
bubble
first?
Right, yeah. First? Right?
How are we already jumping to the next? He's doubling down.
You know, it's funny, but you hear so much contradicting reports from the NBA that, you know, and I agree with everything Silver says. I mean, there's no guarantee at this point. I think they can put that plan together with safe health and safety protocols to make sure it's safe. You even heard Dr. Fauci come out and say, I think the NBA has a good plan in place, which is great. But you're right. Let's get that right first and not worry about a second bubble for the eight teams that aren't even going to be in the first bubble. So, but very optimistic. We're hopeful. I know hockey has the two sites now in Canada, in Toronto and Edmonton. Baseball seems to have a plan in place. Just with every day that we inch closer, you know, we get a little bit more excited from our side of the counter, and I think the bettors do as well.
Yeah, and so they're talking about the second bubble city would be in Chicago. And, I mean, Chuck, think about it from this perspective, too. In the main bubble, we're already seeing certain players opt out. You're telling me these players in this basically consolation ladder, there's going to be less players who are going to opt out? I mean, what's the incentive? I mean, obviously getting more money in the profit, but at what point does the incentive stop and you go, okay, why are we doing it? I mean, from like a winning perspective, what's the point?
That's, I think, the biggest head scratcher about the second one. I mean, you understand on the first one, there's guys that have talked about for, you know, for personal reasons, they may have to leave that first bubble, and some of that stuff's totally understandable,
right?
But not sure what the incentive will be with that second one. So I think there is a little bit of a question there. I don't blame the NBA for doing that and looking at that route, but let's just make sure that the first one's good first and we get those games played and we have an opportunity to crown an NBA champion and then worry about the second bubble later. That would be my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems so volatile because one day we're like, okay, Adam Silver says there is a possibility it might not happen. The next day, you know what, I think we're going to add a second bubble to Chicago.
First one might not happen, but we have two now.
Yeah,
so.
Now we got a backup plan, I guess. But no, look, it would be, as a bettor, as a fan, yeah, that would be awesome. More games to bet on. We would love that. But being a realist, we're like, okay, hold it. Let's just, you know, take it day by day, get the first one under wraps. So, look, if that comes to fruition and it ends up working, yeah, I'm all for it. I mean, we'll see the Bulls play again. And, you know, Jacob will get to give a little bit more crap to Zach Levine.
Zach Levine. That's awesome.
No, that's always a plus for our good pal Jacob producing the show, Jacob Roach. And so, yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens with the NBA. But like we said on Doc for the show today, we'll talk some NHL with Mike Palm, baseball with Jeff Erickson, and then Chuck and I will be talking Bears football going with Trubisky versus Foles, how those odds have shifted dramatically. What the season win total looks like at Bet Rivers in Chicago. We know the mobile app launched a couple weeks ago, so we'll delve into all of that and more. And, yeah, going to be a good show going underway on this 4th of July. So hockey coming, football coming, in baseball, all of that and more here on Bet on Chicago. Hello, everybody, and welcome into Bet on Chicago. Happy 4th of July weekend. I'm Danny Burke with the Vegas Stats and Information Network, as always, broadcasting live in Las Vegas, Nevada, at the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa. Alongside me, per usual, our good buddy Chuck Esposito, sportsbook director at Sunset Station. Chuck, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Danny. Happy 4th of July weekend to you, too. I'm hoping by the end of the month we have some fireworks from three of the four major sports leagues, but we'll just kind of wait and see right now. But things are at least trending in that direction.
Yeah, that's what we're gearing for, and that's what we'll be dissecting today and be preparing for with Mike Palm. We'll be talking hockey in just a few moments. We'll welcome him on and look at these series prices, get his thoughts, handicapping analysis and more. Then we'll go back and talk a little bit more about the starting quarterback position with the Bears and Trubisky versus Foles, because Chuck and I hit on that. We saw how the odds shifted dramatically. They moved even more so. So we'll update you on that. And then we'll go back to the diamond, talk some baseball with Jeff Erickson, RotoWire senior editor and host of RotoWire Fantasy Sports Today. Look at some props involving players on both the Sox, the Cubs, division odds and season win totals. So we'll hit that at the end of the show. But like we said, now we'll welcome on our good friend Mike Palm at Mike Palm Circa over at Circa Sports. Mike, thanks for joining the show. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you, Danny and Chuck? It's an honor to be on Bet on Chicago for the first time.
No, we're doing good. We're excited to have you on and talk to you about hockey. I know you've been coming out a lot of the VSiN shows and giving your handicapping perspective for the series. So let's go ahead and start right into it. And I know Chuck wants to hit on this even a little bit more. So let's just kick it off with the Blackhawks and Oilers, because I know the Blackhawks were a team you were kind of eyeing. As we look at their odds over at stations, they're plus 135 as a dog, the Oilers minus 155. What were your initial thoughts when you saw these series prices posted for this specific matchup?
Well, there's three first-round matchups, or what they call in play-em round matchups, that I've bet already, Danny and Chuck, and this is one of them. Both of the 12-5 matchups I played, and I like the dog in this one. I didn't understand why Edmonton was I took $1.40 with the Blackhawks. I didn't understand why Edmonton was so heavy here at 160, and now it's come down a little bit, 155. I think these two teams are really close together in terms of how they play hockey and how competitive they are. Tremendous offensive talent on both sides. Sometimes goaltending a little bit suspect. I'm not a Mikko Koskinen guy. I rode Mike Smith a little bit when they went on that road trip winning streak. So I'm not really confident. Obviously, Mike Smith getting up in years here. Crawford, who started out shaky, I was surprised he got the split time evenly with Leonard while Leonard was still there before they dealt him. They dealt him to Las Vegas. Crawford has played better the second half of the year, obviously. And so I think this is a real even series. I mean, there's obviously you know, they're going to be played on neutral ice. So if it's Edmonton and Toronto, maybe the series is in Toronto. But I would have made this probably Edmonton 120 or 125. So I just think there's a lot of value in the Blackhawks, and I think it's probably a five-game series.
Hey, Mike, it's Chuck. It's good to be chatting with you. I agree with you. I guess when I look at the series, you look at Edmonton, and they were so close. I mean, they almost were one of the four teams in the Western Conference that received a bye. It's definitely experience versus youth, although the average age of the two teams is very close. I'm talking more about playoff experience versus non-playoff experience. And I do think the way they're talking about it right now, though, is that the Western Conference will be played in Edmonton. Now, we know there'll be no fans there, but it is still the Oilers, you know, home stadium. So you're talking about an Edmonton team that just went 17-17-6 at home, actually had a better road record. They were only one of four teams that had a 500 record or below at home. Chicago was one of the others, Nashville and Calgary. So that may help the Hawks a little bit too. Hawks were 2-1 against them during the regular season. But they did lose a game late where McDavid didn't play in that game. And you look at Edmonton being number one on the power play, number two on the kill. And I think from the back end, that is the key to Chicago. I think you have to get some help on the backside. It looks like Calvin DeHaan might be back, which I think would be huge for the Hawks. But I clearly can see why Edmonton is the favorite. But I agree with you. I think at minus $1.60, that was a little rich for a lot of people. And I think this number is going to continue to go down as we get closer and closer to the end of the month.
Yeah, Edmonton probably is a team that caught a bad break with the way the season ended. Because if you look at their race with the Knights, they had the majority of their games at home while the Knights had to play on the road. It was unbalanced in the number of games they played. But as it is, they find themselves in this playoff round. And probably, I don't know, you could argue that out of the eight matchups, this might be the sexiest one.
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, nobody wanted to play the Hawks, of course. And if you look at the league itself, and I think it was the Carey Price, Patrick Kane rule that no one wanted to have to play them in a best of three, knowing that Price could stand on his head and steal a series for Montreal. And the way that Kane has played against the Oilers, he scored at least 3 points in three games since the 15-16 season. He's definitely dangerous. And I think looking at a Hawks team that hasn't been in the postseason for 3 years, having that opportunity now for that veteran team, because Edmonton was going to be in it no matter what. That wasn't the case for the Hawks. I think the Hawks have a lot to prove here. They've made a change in the president. You've got a new president right now in Danny Wirtz. I think you look at both Stan Bowman and Jeremy Calton, and this series is huge to see what they actually can build on for next year and if they'll even be back for next year. And I think that's another reason you'll see this price continue to dip.
Mike Palm with us here on Bet on Chicago at Mike Palm Circa on Twitter, over at Circa Sports. And we're going over these NHL series prices, and we're sticking in the Western Conference here. And a dog that could also make a lot of noise here, Mike, potentially at least, are the Minnesota Wild going up against the Canucks. We see the Wild over at stations at +110, Vancouver -130. Any thoughts in this series, Mike?
Well, you know, obviously the Wild were a different team when they made the head coaching change and they got that lift. I bet a ticket on them, I think, 2 games after they fired Boudreau at 125-1 to win the Cup. So I've got an interest in this series already. Chuck mentioned with youth versus experience in the Blackhawks series with Edmonton. This is really so in the case of playoffs. I mean, almost no experience on this Vancouver team. So I would give the slight edge there to Minnesota. I'm not going to make a bet on this series, though, because I'm already invested in Minnesota to win the Cup with a long shot ticket. But could be another series where if I did have to make a bet, I wouldn't lay a price with Vancouver.
You know, I think, Mike, when you look at the Western Conference, you can make a case in these best of five for all four underdogs. I think you can really make a case more so than in the Eastern Conference. But I think they're all live. I think there's value with all of them. I like the Canucks. I think they're the better team. But you're right. They're a very young team. This is kind of uncharted water for them. It's a big series. But, they definitely have the edge as far as speed goes. It's just, can the Wild score enough in this series against the Vancouver team? But again, I think there's a lot of value there, and whatever one of these the eight losers out of this first series, I mean, I guess they've got a 12.5% chance to land Alexis Lafreniere, which will be huge. If it's Montreal, the Rangers, or Chicago, you can imagine what an impact player that would be for those three original six teams.
I think the goaltending edge, you'd have to give it to Vancouver in this series, just because of the down year by Dubnyk. I know Stalock played decently at times, but we know how Dubnyk has been in the past. But based on just on their work this year, a slight edge to Markstrom in the Vancouver net.
Danny Burke and Chuck Esposito here on Bet on Chicago, talking with Mike Palm about the NHL series prices. Hopefully we get the NHL underway here at the end of the month, as Chuck was talking about earlier. And it's a good opportunity to maybe take advantage of some of these prices before they shift dramatically, also, like Chuck was saying. And before we move on to the Eastern Conference side, Mike, I want to ask, did you have any thoughts on the Predators, Coyotes, Jets, and Flames? We see the Predators as the favorite, -135, the Coyotes +115, and then in the other series, the Flames -1.25, the Jets +105. Any thoughts in either of those series?
I didn't play either one, Danny. I would look. I know they're a little short on defense, but I still think this Winnipeg team is a decent team that also could make a run. I'm not in love with Calgary at all. Rittich to me is not as consistent in his goal as I would like. Young as well, they're explosive at times, but not as a consistent a team. I think this Winnipeg team is sneaky, and not only that, as they could win as a dog in the first round matchup, but it could maybe make a little noise beyond that.
I think they have the advantage in goaltending. I think Hollenbach, it's a huge advantage there. And again, I can't stress enough, I really think when you look at these four matchups in the Western Conference, you can make a serious case that that there's value on all four underdogs. I personally don't think that's the case on all four in the Eastern Conference, although you can make a case. I think the Western Conference, it's not going to surprise me if three of the four dogs win that series, their series is.
All right, Mike, and then let's go ahead and look at the East. Now, I know we have talked about this specific matchup, and I know you bet this one as well, the Penguins and the Canadiens. Now, this one kind of befuddled me a little bit, too, because this price I saw as low as minus -190 in favor of the Penguins at one point. The Canadiens were plus +170, but now we see the Canadiens plus +175, the Penguins minus -210. I mean, the Canadiens were such an inconsistent team, really. They were such an anomaly. I couldn't figure them out. And the Penguins, if anything, this hiatus could benefit them from the injury standpoint. So explain your assessment on this series, and do the Canadiens really have any shot in your mind?
I don't. I think you ought to bet this to be a sweep, or maybe even bet Pittsburgh in three or in four. I don't have any faith in this Canadiens team. They're really the only team that doesn't deserve to be in the playoffs. You could make the argument the Blackhawks were peaking and had a shot. This Canadian team was swept by the Red Wings. Okay, this Canadian team had 2 8-plus game losing streaks. There's just nothing behind price here. To your point about it, I mean, nobody was ravaged by injuries, especially to their top players, more than the Penguins. Murray, not a great year in net, but I don't see Montreal being able to score three goals in these games in order to beat the Penguins. I think this is, you know, I don't, in any one individual hockey game, I never lay more than 160, Chuck. But in the series, I laid $2 here. I thought this would probably be a runaway and get as high as 220 before they actually drop the puck in game one. So I have a pretty substantial play laying $2 on the Penguins.
Yeah, I really favor the Penguins as well, Mike. I think, you know, when you look at these two teams and you look at the few amount of wins that the Canadiens had and their plus-minus goal ratio, I mean, it's hard to make a case outside of that Price could maybe stand on his head and steal a game or two. I want to say that, hey, they don't deserve to be in and the Blackhawks do, but you're still talking about a Blackhawk team that was dead last in their division. So this structure clearly gave two teams that weren't going to be in the postseason an opportunity to be in it. I just don't think the Canadiens have enough. I do think Chicago has enough to make some noise. And if the Hawks, I know we're talking Eastern Conference, but if they happen to win this series, I think it gets quite interesting for that bunch of guys playing together and having an opportunity to maybe make some noise. But I know it's a bigger price than the Penguins, but I just don't think the Canadiens have enough to make it a series.
All right, Mike, and then how about this matchup? Now, this one has really just made me scratch my head leading up until the postseason. Until we get there, I'll still be scratching my head because I just don't know which way to lean. I mean, I have a small lean, and it's the Islanders and Panthers. We see the Islanders minus -115, the Panthers minus -105. I kind of gravitate a little bit toward the Islanders. Overall, I'm going to stick away, but look, Bobrovsky didn't really go into the hype that he was supposed to have this season. And at the same time, the Islanders were back and forth all season. They had a great streak in November, but maybe they could benefit from this break. I mean, how do you see this one playing out?
Yeah, probably my most disappointing preseason bet was the Islanders at 30-1 to win the cup. So again, I'm invested future with the Islanders. Florida, Bobrovsky, probably the biggest bust. Mm-hmm. All the money they paid him did not have a good year. Thought Florida made a mistake in letting Reimer go, who's the backup now in Carolina. I think this Reimer has a big future, and they really didn't have much to spell Bobrovsky. Barkov's extremely talented, but this Florida team gives up a lot of goals, which if you let the Islanders score three, they don't lose very often. So I'd lean Islanders here. I think it's probably a good first-round matchup for them, but as I said, no pre-flop play because I have the future ticket.
I love the coaching matchup in this series. Of course, with getting Quenneville back in the postseason with Florida. And the Islanders just played so bad, Mike, that late in the season. I mean, if you look at that last 30 days, I mean, they were a team that was really struggling. So maybe, as Danny said, this opportunity for the break gets them an opportunity to get back on track. You know, I know one series that I love, guys. I love the Blue Jackets against the Maple Leafs. I think similar to that Hawks-Oilers price, I think this price is just way too high. You look at the Jackets and what they did last year. They were all in, but the way that they were able to beat Tampa in that series, and they beat a Tampa team that could score. And this is a similar Maple Leaf team that from the offensive side of the ice, they are the most dangerous team in the league. And now you look at the Jackets getting this price. I think there's huge value on the Jackets, and it wouldn't surprise me to see them win this series.
I agree with you, Chuck. I haven't played this yet. Probably going to watch a game before I get involved, maybe mid-series. I can't back Toronto. The defensive commitment just isn't there from this team. And when you talk about coaching matchups, I mean, Tortorella and a series obviously adds value. What they did against an all-time great regular season team in Tampa Bay last year. And look, they've had some young goalies step up. There's been some injuries. But whoever they've put in there has done a very serviceable job. So I'm just not on – I don't know that I could ever bet Toronto in any spot in the playoffs this year.
Yeah, we see the Blue Jackets plus 145. The Maple Leafs minus 165 over at stations. Mike, great analysis as always. Appreciate you coming on. Enjoy your 4th of July weekend. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, guys. Have a great 4th of July, Chuck and Danny and all the listeners out there.
All right, you bet. At Mike Palm Circa is where you can follow him on Twitter. The Palm Reader's Playbook, he always posts those out there. So if you want some great bets, soccer, baseball, hockey, whatever it may be sure to check him out at Mike Palm Circa on Twitter. Well, when we return here on Bet on Chicago, Chuck and I will transition to the gridiron. We'll talk some football, some Bears football. We'll continue our conversation with who's going to be the starting quarterback for the Bears. And we saw Trubisky become the favorite. As we were talking about it last week after Ted Ginn went on TV and said he thought he was going to be the favorite. And now those odds have shifted even more. We'll let you know what those went into when we return here on Bet on Chicago. Myself, Danny Berg, Chuck Esposito here. Talk football on Bet on Chicago. Welcome back into Bet on Chicago. Danny Burke alongside Chuck Esposito here at the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa in Las Vegas with the Vegas Stats and Information Network. Big thanks to Mike Palm for joining the program, diving into those NHL series prices, some of his favorite picks at Mike Palm Circus, where you can follow him on Twitter, where he releases Palm Reader's Playbook. He gives picks all over the sports landscape. But now we will transition to the NFL. And like we said earlier, Chuck and I were hitting on this last week. We've hit on it a bunch of times, and it's who's going to be the Bears starting quarterback week one. Now, this prop's been up for quite a while, and I think originally DraftKings might have had it, and FanDuel's been consistent with having theirs up. And originally, we saw Trubisky at one point as the underdog, plus 200, a 2-1 dog to be the starting quarterback. Nick Foles was seemingly the overwhelming favorite. People we had on the show who were close to the team believed and still probably do that Nick Foles is lined up to be the starter. But this whole time, myself, Chuck, and I know Matt Eumanns over at VSiN 2 have just really been preaching that it makes too much sense for Trubisky to be the starter. And then we see a couple weeks ago, maybe a week and a half ago, Ted Ginn Jr., he goes on one of the NFL Network shows and says, I fully believe I'm going into camp expecting Trubisky to be the starter. All of a sudden, we see the odds shift, Chuck, and we saw him at minus -150, Trubisky being last week. And we check again today, minus 185 for Mitch Trubisky. How about it?
I'm mad at myself, Danny. We've been talking about it for as long as I can remember since they signed Foles. Who will be the starting quarterback? And I think you can make a case for both guys, but there's a couple things that just stand out so much. And I think, first of all, it's the limited preseason, the two games. I don't think you really see Foles have an opportunity to shine. He could play better, but you're going to be talking about a very small sample size. I know last year that Nagy got away from playing his starters in the preseason, and he felt it hurt. I just don't see these two guys getting a tremendous amount of play during the preseason. There's a couple of things that stand out to me so much. One is that Matt Nagy is 4-0 or 8-0 total against two teams since he took over the Bears. They are the Lions and the Vikings. Who do they open up with? the Lions. Who was his quarterback in three of those four games? Mitchell Trubisky. The rest of the league, he's not as good. He's 13-12 against the number. I think, but when you look at Trubisky in the three games that he started against the Lions, and to me, this is what just screams, he's going to start week one. He's got a 124.4 quarterback rating, and his TD to interception ratio is 9-1. And he's won all three games that he started against them. I think it's hard to argue that point, that if there's one team in the league that Mitchell Trubisky owns, and I can't believe I'm actually saying that he owns anybody, it's the Detroit Lions. How does he not start week one?
Chuck, here's the thing. We've been speculating. You're bringing the cold, hard facts with that, and that just adds to our argument even more so, because the arguments we've been preaching is that, look, this offseason was going to be different from the pandemic, and you nailed it with the preseason now that we know it's cut in half to two games. But even before that, we were still like, okay, maybe the training camps are going to be affected, not your regular routine. And then the argument, oh, but Nick Foles has familiarity with Matt Nagy. Yeah, sure. I mean, he's been with him before, but that's different. Now you're on a complete different team. Scheme could have been different. He wasn't a head coach then. Trubisky, still the guy you traded up to get in the draft. He's still the golden goose for Pace. You still need to give him at least one more shot. And if you don't, then you're pretty much saying, okay, we're done with Trubisky. No, you have to go into the season at least giving him another opportunity after having all this offseason, everything catching all the heat this past season. Now it's now or never, and we know that. And you put that together, and then you look at the schedule, like we said. Who do they have week one? They have the Lions. Who, you look at the stats, how can you not give him this chance against a team like the Lions? And if he can't get it done there, okay.
If he can't get it done against a team that he owns, right. I couldn't agree with you more. But.
Yeah, and we're not saying that Trubisky, either we want or think he's going to be the quarterback throughout the season. We just think he's going to start week one.
Right, and I think we talked about it a little bit last week. We touched on it. The Titans kind of went through the same thing. Mm-hmm. They went out and got Tannehill as kind of that insurance policy in case, and Mariota too, the number two overall pick. Granted, they didn't give up as much to get him, but there was some, you know, who went back and forth about should it be Mariota number two or should he go number one?
Right.
And he goes number two. But Trubisky, I think the fact that you pass on Mahomes and Watson and what you gave up, you can't just say in a two-game preseason, unless something catastrophic happens, that he's not going to be your starter. If you're Ryan Pace, you had to go out and get a quarterback behind him because everybody screamed that, hey, Chase Daniel isn't the guy. If this guy can't take the next step, you have a defense that can get you to the postseason and maybe win a Super Bowl, but you don't on the offensive side. Yep. So you need somebody to push this kid, and that's why they went out and got Nick Foles. But I have to believe the Bears brass, without saying it publicly, they fully want Mitchell Trubisky to win this. And I have some more stats that we can talk about kind of from the gaming side that would favor both guys maybe having a somewhat of a renaissance season, but we can chat about that in a little while. But I just think with these stats from the gaming side, again, I'm mad that we missed it. But God, 9-1 against the Lions.
We'll discuss when we return here on Bet on Chicago. Welcome back into Bet on Chicago. Danny Burke alongside Chuck Esposito, sportsbook director over at Sunset Station. We're with the Vegas Stats and Information Network, broadcasting live at the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa. Here to talk some betting in the NFL atmosphere. We were hitting on the Chicago Bears starting quarterback prop last segment, as we've hit on Trubisky's odds climbing and climbing as the favorite, went from a 2-1 dog all the way up to a minus 185 favorite over at FanDuel. Nick Foles now the dog at plus 125. Chuck and I were discussing why we've really just been preaching this all along, and you know, now it just lined up for Trubisky, not only because it just made sense. You had to give him one last shot, but then you actually go more in depth who they're playing week one, the Lions, and how historically well Trubisky has done against the Lions, as Chuck has pointed out. And Chuck's got some more cold, hard facts to back up his statement, too, on why we believe Trubisky is going to be that guy week one, minus 185.
Well, I think those stats, Danny, really, you know, speak volumes of why he should start. But you can actually make a case for both guys having some sort of a renaissance that really playing well this year. And that's because of, you know, what the Bears did in the offseason and their new offensive coordinator, Bill Lazor. I think that when you look at Lazor, when first go back to Foles. Foles, outside of his Super Bowl year that they won the Super Bowl with the Eagles, in 2013, he had his best year ever. Who was his quarterback's coach? Bill Lazor, the Bears' offensive coordinator. His TD to interception ratio that year was 29-2. He was also the offensive coordinator in Miami in 2014. Ryan Tannehill, his best statistical year was with Lazor. And then when you look at 2018, he was the offensive coordinator for Cincinnati. Andy Dalton start that year on fire. They were 5-3 before he got hurt and was on the cusp of one of his best statistical years. Now, I'm not sure if Nagy's going to relinquish the play calling or not, but based on this, I think he has to give Lazor a chance to be the play caller. And I think both these guys, when you look at props as far as maybe touchdown passes and yards, I think a lot favors these two guys surpassing what those numbers are out there because of what the impact of their offensive coordinator can have on this team.
Yeah, and like, I mean, if you're bringing him in as a different addition, obviously the offense is the main issue to address with this Bears team. But you got to think Nagy a little bit has to take some sort of step back. He was catching a lot of heat last season. First year is, okay, this guy's a magician. He's pulling all these tricks out of his hat. He's got all these weird plays. You know, offensive linemen are catching touchdown passes last year. Where's Montgomery? He's not getting the ball. What's going on here? So that is going to be fascinating to see what that dynamic revolves around with the play calling. And, you know, like you pointed out, I mean, there could be magic happening with these quarterbacks and who they brought in, and that could certainly bode well for Trubisky. We know it has for Foles, so that's why we keep saying Trubisky probably going to get that chance to have magic happen for him. We've seen it happen with Foles, so that's why you have him in the bullpen. Worst case scenario, you got him ready to go with the experience.
Yeah, I think so. You know, it was a perfect storm for them a couple years ago. I mean, you look at a 12-win season in his you know, rookie year with Nagy, and how good was that? They're still 20-12. I think when Nagy got the job, if you would have said, hey, the Bears will be 20-12 after 2 years, we all would have been, heck yeah, we will take it. But after going 12-4 and then finishing 8-8, defensively, they took a step back. They were still top five, but they didn't create those turnovers. And because of the offensive struggles, mainly at quarterback, and like you said, Montgomery not being able to run the ball, the defense was on the field just way too much. They go out and they get Quinn. You've got a healthy Khalil Mack now. You've got a healthy Hicks. I think that defense is going to take another step up and be dangerous. It really is up to the offense, and I think between Nagy and Lazor, they're the two guys that whoever the quarterback may be. Again, I think early it's going to be Trubisky. He's going to be given every chance to win that job and to be the guy. But if not, I think with some of the success Foles has had, winning a Super Bowl, playing well under this offensive coordinator, I think it bodes well for either guy. And I think when you talk about win totals out there at maybe 7.5 or 8, I think there's value on the Bears. I think both the Vikings and Packers have taken a step back. And I think both the Lions and Bears are better now. The two bottom teams in the NFC North, I think both, in my opinion, have taken a step forward. I think it's going to be a lot closer division than what people give those two teams credit for. And I think the Bears win over 7.5 games.
Yeah, and you speak of that win total, 7.5 games, as we talked about earlier on the show a couple weeks back, and speaking a couple weeks back, what it was that mobile betting for Bet Rivers in Illinois became legal. It launched, well, it was already legal, but it finally launched. It came to fruition, and we look at the season win total that they have for the Bears, and I was a little shocked by this, honestly. They have it at 7.5, the over, naturally, the favorite, minus -130, the under, the dog, at +107. I thought it was going to be more in the 8 to 8.5 range, Chuck, just based off the hometown love.
They're going to be rooting against them this year by the time it's done.
No, I'm kidding. I'm sure it will get there when more people actually get signed up with everything going on, not as many people traveling and just really maybe not having the funds at this moment, whatever those circumstances are. But, and it's only minus -130, too, to the over 7.5. And look, Chuck, I mean, we've seen it go from 8.5 to 7.5. It's very, they probably varied more than most teams in the NFL, if not the most. 7.5, it'd be hard to convince me to go to the under. I'm not rushing to go over 7.5. It wouldn't surprise me if they got 7, but the expectation is at least 8.
Oh, I mean, you think about it, Danny. They went 8-8 last year, and they did not have a good season. They easily should have beaten the Chargers. They missed a field goal at the end. They had an opportunity to beat the Raiders in London after falling way behind. They should have finished with 10 wins last year. This is a team that I think is much better than everyone's talking about, the Packers and the Vikings. Vikings lose four starters on defense, four key reserves. You lose Stephon Diggs. I think they've taken a step back. I think there's a lot more pressure on Kirk Cousins. We don't know what ultimately is going to happen with Delvin Cook. And the Packers, I mean, they basically told Aaron Rodgers the same thing they told Brett Favre. We're ready to move on.
Yep.
And it wasn't good at that point, and I don't think it's going to be good again just because it's Rodgers. He doesn't accept that kind of stuff well.
Right.
Although it is Rodgers, he's got something to prove. It's not going to stun me if he has a phenomenal year, but I think the Bears should be in that discussion to win the NFC North, and I really think 7.5 over is a bargain at this point.
All right, before we round out this segment, I got to ask you about this because he almost became a Bear, a lot of people thought, I guess, and that's Cam Newton, we now know, going with the Patriots. Was he guaranteed $500,000 and then maybe over $1 million with the incentives? Are you shocked by this, and how do you think this is going to play out for New England?
Well, I'm shocked by the size of the deal. I mean, you talk about Cam Newton, you know, a Heisman Trophy winner, national champion, MVP, almost won a Super Bowl, and but it's Belichick. I mean, if you talk about who's the smartest coach in the league, I mean, he kind of looked at the landscape, and what did he have to lose at that point, just guaranteeing $500,000? I think he still believes.
Steal.
Absolutely a steal. And if Newton has to have something to prove. I mean, you look at guys like, you think about it, and I know, you know, it's a Chicago show, and think about what the Bears gave Mike Glennon. Think about that.
I don't like to think
about it. No, but think about that contract.
Yeah.
And what his resume was compared to Cam Newton's. So if you're Belichick, you absolutely got to steal. Yeah. There's nothing to lose at this point. I still think they believe in Stidham, and it's a short preseason as well. I think Stidham starts,
okay,
but it's not going to stun me to see Newton have an opportunity, or at least they have some sort of a two-headed tandem there where they're going back and forth between the two. But it's a big year for Newton because he has to have that opportunity to get a paycheck in 2021.
All righty, Stidham the starter. You heard it here first. Coming up next, baseball with Jeff Erickson. Alrighty, rounding up another edition of Bet on Chicago. Danny Burke alongside Chuck Esposito. He's a sportsbook director over at Sunset Station. We're broadcasting live in Las Vegas, Nevada, per usual. We're going to talk some baseball now, and for that, we'll bring on our friend Jeff Erickson at Jeff_Erickson on Twitter. Senior editor over at RotoWire, host of RotoWire Fantasy Sports Today. Jeff, thanks for taking some time to join the show. How are you doing?
Doing good, Danny. What's going on?
Not too much, just gearing up for this baseball season to hopefully get underway. So we're going to throw a lot at your way. I'm going to throw some props here. Chuck's going to give you some questions too. And first, because I know we talked last week over at VSiN, and I was giving you some props, but I did not get you this one. So this one's just going to really, I mean, it's AL Rookie of the Year, but two White Sox players make the top three odds-wise over at BetMGM. And you see Luis Robert 4-1 as the favorite, Lizardo's 5-1, Kopech 6-1. And you get McKay at 7-1. Do you think a White Sox player at the end of the season will end up being AL Rookie of the Year?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good they definitely have to be the odds-on favorite. Just, you know, with Luis Robert with the contract, that's a big deal. You know, he gets the guaranteed playing time right away. You know, he had that huge jump in power last year, and I wonder if that carries over to the bigs this year. But we at least we know that he's going to be in there every day. That's what I look for a little bit. There are guys that we don't worry about any sort of service time manipulation, any sort of delay in their debut. So, like for instance, Kopech, on the other hand, I probably couldn't get behind that as readily, just because of what he's coming back from and the notion that he might be limited a little bit in the innings pitch right away. So I'd look at Robert as a better bet than Kopech. The odds aren't great at 400 at plus 400, but at the same time, he's got to be considered the favorite. I like Evan White also a little bit there. And the one pitcher I would go for is Jesus Luzardo because he made his debut last year. A's have already said he's not going to get any innings pitch limitations. So, you know, they won't have to worry about any sort of shutdown. That's the good thing with the shortened season is all these rookies, their workload's not going to be managed nearly as much as it would have been otherwise.
Yeah, and you pointed out Evan White. He's at 16-1 over at BetMGM.
Hey, Jeff. It's Chuck Esposito with Station Casinos. Good to be on with you. I agree with you on Robert, and I know the price isn't great, but I think the whole White Sox team, when you look at even, you know, our future book to win the American League and, you know, to win the World Series, there's no team in the entire league that has had a drop like the White Sox. They have become favorites to everybody. The Reds are kind of that team in the National League, but not quite as much of a drop is what we've seen with the White Sox. I mean, they expect huge things. There's only a couple of teams in the entire American League that have shorter odds than them to win the World Series right now. So they are that vogue team that we see every year. And, you know, players have to hear chatter that they are kind of a popular team, that expectations are through the roof. I know they're a young team. I know they made a lot of additions in the offseason, but I think to some degree that's some added pressure on this young team, and I think it's much more important to them to get off to a quick start than, say, maybe the Cubs in the National League, because there's so much pressure on this young team and the expectations seem to be sky high.
Sure, and I'm glad you mentioned the Reds, too, because those are the two teams that, quote-unquote, won the offseason. Made a lot of big moves, made that big step to try to compete. However, I don't love them to try to win the division, only for two reasons. One, the competition level. I do think that the Minnesota Twins are a stronger team. And two, the bottom of their rotation. They really need Dylan Cease to improve his control. They need those 4 and 5 starters to take the next step up. Reynaldo Lopez has had some really nice outings. And he's had others that you kind of wonder, if he's even going to be able to hold on to a spot. Gio Gonzalez is the fifth. Carlos Rodon might be able to come up. Michael Kopech, as we've talked about, the previous question, he might be part of the picture too. But that bottom end of the rotation is kind of rough, at least compared to some of the other contending teams out there. So I probably wouldn't bet on them to win the division, especially because those odds have gotten shorter. I don't think that he's going to be a good return on. They're not going to be a good return on investment.
Yeah, the White Sox +330 over at PointsBet to win the AL Central. We're talking with Jeff Erickson at Jeff_Erickson, RotoWire senior editor, host of RotoWire Fantasy Sports Today's, where you can find him as well. All right, Jeff, let's move on to another prop. How about pitcher to record most strikeouts? This one over at BetMGM as well, and I ask you this because a Sox pitcher and a Cubs pitcher make pretty much the top half of this list, and I'll just go through some of the names. No surprise, Garrett Cole at the top, +230. Scherzer, +550. Verlander, 9-1. DeGrom, 10-1. Trevor Bauer, 15-1, along with Shane Bieber. Then Flaherty, 18-1. Then you get Lucas Giolito at 18-1. And Yu Darvish at 25-1. I know we've talked about this. So explain why you're leaning a little bit with the Cubs pitcher in this prop.
The odds are you're getting better odds, first of all. Secondly, we look at what he did over the last 20 starts last year. I will say this. I think that AL pitchers generally have a better chance of retaining their strikeout level. We're adding the universal DH this year, so National League pitchers are naturally getting pushed down a little bit. And some of this, Dana, is going to be just a matter of who gets to the bell first, who's ready to go right away. And so, for instance, Justin Verlander, he's been throwing from a mound for like the last month, but we don't know how intense that's been. Remember, he had some arm problems in spring training. Is he going to be ready right away? Is he going to be able to go deep in the games? Is he going to have that same sort of command? So that's why I kind of look to see, and we're really going to have to pay attention these next 2 weeks, next 2.5 weeks, what sort of information we're going to get. It's been a drip, drip, drip of information. Now we're going to open the floodgates and we're going to have to get that strainer out and figure out what's real, what's just noise. And the problem is, even other reporters are restricted in their access to the team. They're doing a teleconference with the manager. Then, they're not up close. They're doing it from far distance. I saw a lot of reporter shots, team workouts today, from distance in the stands. It's a different way to report right now, and it's going to be hard to get that good information. I do like Darvish. I think he's with those control issues that he had last year. I like Giolito. I got him in a draft last night. I actually did my first sprint season draft last night.
Hey, Jeff, it's Chuck again. I agree with you on Darvish with the price. The one thing I worry about is, will he go deep enough in games? I look at what he averages per nine innings, and, of course, that puts him right there. And I think the value is tremendous. But when you look at how many innings Cole logs or Scherzer logs, you just don't see that with Darvish. I mean, he's that, you know, so many times he's pitching such a great game, but by the fifth or sixth inning, it starts to wane a little bit. And he's more, to me, of a five or six inning guy, opposed to those guys being more of a seven or eight inning guy. And I think that's what's going to hurt him a little bit. Although the price is great, I just don't know he goes deep enough into games to get that strikeout record and to beat those two guys, in my opinion.
That's a great point, Chuck. And, you know, the thing is, I think when he improved his control, that he was able to work a little deeper. You look at some of his September starts, he went 7-8 in two of his last three starts. You're kind of hoping for that. But you're right. That's definitely a concern. Now, the Yankees came out and said yesterday and said that in their first start, they wanted their pitchers to go 60 pitches. Cole pushed back against that a little bit. Usually the pitcher wins that debate, especially when he signs a record contract like he did. So that's something to kind of watch for, too. And we'll see. In the Yankees, they have this presumption that they're going to make the playoffs. So they want to make sure that they're ready for September and October and not necessarily push it as hard in July and August.
Yeah, we threw two other props up on the board at Station Casinos that I wanted to ask you about. One is most regular season wins by any team during the season, and we put that up at 39.5. It quickly got bet up to 40. And most regular season home runs by any player during the season, we put that up at 20, and that quickly got bet up to 20.5 as well. Do you agree with both those going up? And if so, why or why not?
I don't. And the reason is, so you prorate 40 wins in a 60-game schedule. That's 108-plus wins in a 162-game season. Right? You're assuming a lot of stratification, and you're doing it, you know, over a short season. Yeah, it's possible, but keep in mind, like, the favorites are the Dodgers and the Yankees with the two highest totals. They play exclusively West and East teams, respectively. They're not facing that soft underbelly of the Central. That's why, I almost like the Twins as a sneaky team as for most wins, just because a third of their schedule against the Tigers and the Royals. Yes, you do get the Orioles in the East. You do get the Mariners in the West. Now, those are a couple of the weaker sister teams. The Giants could be terrible this year, too. That's possible. But I kind of feel like the West and the East are the two tougher thirds. I think that makes it hard to get to that total. So I'd probably go under on that.
Jeff, speaking of season wins, before we get you out of here, how about the Cubs at 32.5 over at PointsBet, -110 each way, and the White Sox at 31.5, -110 each way? Any confidence leaning one way or the other on each respective team?
Well, it's funny because we were talking about the Sox earlier and how I don't necessarily like them to win the AL Central, but they do get that benefit of the schedule, the Tigers and Royals, and I think they will fatten up over those. So I kind of like the Sox total there. Cubs side, yeah, it's all dependent on their pitching. We just saw the news on Jose Quintana, how he cut his hand washing dishes. Now he's going to be out at least a couple of weeks, which means he's before he even throws again, which means he's going to miss the first few weeks of the season. You know, is Alec Mills up to the test? Is Tyler Chatwood up to the test? I think I'd probably go under on the Cubs.
All righty. There he is, Jeff Erickson at Jeff_Erickson, RotoWire senior editor, host of RotoWire Fantasy Sports Today. Jeff, great stuff as always. Really appreciate the time.
My pleasure. Thanks, guys.
You bet. All right. Well, so we're looking at the AL Central, Chuck, really quick before we get out of here. But the NL Central, at PointsBet, the Cubs are now the presumed favorite, +215, Cardinals +240, Reds +260, Brewers +320, and the lonely Pirates at the bottom at 40-1. But, you know, Jeff makes a great point about pitchers needing to step up, and we saw Chatwood actually do a great job of that this past season, whether it was offense actually too, and then aside from pitching, lived up to his contract finally.
Yeah, well, now you look at the Cubs with Quintana with the injury there. So, I mean, they're going to be down a starter, so you have to hope that somebody else steps up there and really pitches well. I think one thing we didn't touch on real quickly too is that National League pitchers now aren't going to be able to face a pitcher.
That's right.
So, I mean, from a strikeout perspective, what was that worth to those kind of guys from a game-in, game-out basis? Well, the American League was used to that. So I think strategically it's going to be a little bit different, I think, all the way around in the National League.
Excellent point. Chuck, as always, appreciate it.
Thanks, Danny. Always good to be on with you.
All right, we'll catch you guys next week. Best of luck with your bets. That wraps it up here on Bet on Chicago.